that I wanted to bring up to you because for some reason in Christmas shopping, this concept came up, and I wanted to just run it by you because it speaks to how lazy Americans can be. Do you guys remember at the turn of the century when they would have health centers and sanitariums, and they had that exercise, quote-unquote, machine that was basically a belt around your middle that would wiggle your belly?
Yes!
Do you remember this thing?
Yep. Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah.
Why did we ever think that that would work? Where it's like, you don't have to do a damn thing, but this machine is going to wiggle your belly.
Because we're just going to jiggle you to fitness.
Yeah, because it was like the illusion of exercise.
Well, things are moving. I must be exercising.
Yeah, exactly.
It literally was just like, hey, have you been jiggled today? Did you get your jiggling in? Did you go get your... The doctor says you got to jiggle for 20 minutes. What was that?
But listen, you can't blame him. I mean, what if it would have worked?
If it would have worked, I would have one in my living room right now.
Yeah. I mean, you gotta give them credit. Listen, if it was the turn of the century and it was you and me, Dave, we'd be jiggling during the podcast.
Just like a low blah, 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 the entire time.
Yeah, all the way through the show.
Can I tell you, though, I have to say that I appreciate you both because it did not even occur to me to think of the joke construction like, what if it worked? That's an amazing way to think about it.
But we've all had that thought.
If it had worked, our world would be so different if that thing had worked.
Oh, yes.
Like, no gym would exist anywhere. There would never be, like, a 24-hour fitness or an LA fitness or any of that bullshit.
Oh, can you... Okay, let's take it one step further. Can you imagine the Apple version of the jiggle machine?
It's super clean. It's all white. It's super clean. Yeah. It can hook onto any door frame, so you could take it with you.
Right.
And, you know, okay, let's imagine this world where the jiggler worked. Like, you would have your home-based jiggler, but then when you would check into a hotel, you'd be like, and do you have an available jiggler here at the hotel?
By the way, ordered a room with a jiggler.
And also... I'm definitely seeing jiggler as without the E.
Oh, yeah.
You know what
I
mean? Yeah. Like Flickr.
Like Tumblr or Flickr, yeah.
And okay, yeah, so now, what word would culture apply to someone who jiggles all the time? Like, what name would we call them?
Oh, man.
Oh, what a jigglist. Yeah. Oh, what a...
He's jiggling.
He's jiggling. Like at a party, there's like a man or a woman like looking over their drink, being like, "Oh boy, I bet they jiggle all the time."
Guys, I just haven't been jiggling lately. You know, it's the holidays. I'm really just trying to get back into the jiggling.
And we would look at handheld massagers completely different.
I like, by the way, in the middle of that cough, Brad, you sounded exactly like you're going to sound when you're 95.
We would look at handheld massagers totally different. That was great.
Well, I didn't know whether you wanted me to use the actual word, so I was trying to be a little bit polite, but we would look at those things different, too.
Oh, wait, we're not actually talking about massagers?
Yes, Kevin, we're talking about
massages. Okay, cool.
By the way, taking this in a completely different direction, you guys know the story about the Shocker, the Spider-Man supervillain, the Shocker. You know about his real origin story.
I don't.
No.
If you look at that character, the way John Romita originally drew him, he had a V on his belt. Because his original power wasn't to shock. They already had Electro. They didn't need another electric criminal. This original character, his superpower was to be able to vibrate really, really intensely. And his name was not the Shocker. It was originally the Vibrator. And it almost went all the way through until just before printing, some editor looked at it and said to John Romita, "We can't call this guy the Vibrator."
Can you imagine?
And he was very innocent. He was like, "Well, why not?" they had to explain to him. And that's why if you look at the early, they had to change it on the fly, and it was too late to change his belt. So that's why the Shocker has a V on his belt.
Oh, my God. Huh. Imagine the dialogue in that Spider-Man comics. Stand back, Mary Jane. Don't worry. I know how to handle the vibrator.
And Mary Jane's like, so do I.
You guys have your fight. I'll be right back.
You boys go ahead and tussle. I'll be over here. Well, on that
Losing
note,
weight.
On that note, my friends, I will say hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about making comics, although not today.
And making a living from
Listen
comics.
Listen to the paper being brought out nervously.
I forgot we were going to do an introduction, and I've still got my head in a blanket.
Oh, my God.
And making a living from comics. I'm Brad Geiger, editor of webcomics.com and cartoonist of Evil Inc.
I think, Kevin, we caught him jiggling over there, and that's why he wasn't ready. And anyway, I am his friend Dave Kellett, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. And Dave! Tell us who that third voice is over there.
This is one of our favorite people in the world, Brad Geiger. He is Los Angeles resident, cartoonist, filmmaker, provocateur. I don't know what other. Oh. I'm trying to, humorist of all stripes, both a sketch comedian and occasionally an improver, right, Kevin? Isn't that a fair? You've done improv.
More the other way around. More improv than sketch.
More improv than sketch. Oh, that's true. You know what's funny? I always think of the Lusty Horde as more. Yeah, but yes, okay. All right. So, all right. Anyway.
You are very sketchy, though.
But very sketchy, right. Yes. And a long time, and in by the way, in the alternate universe right now, I'd also be saying, and a lifelong jiggler. Kevin McShane is our guest today, and you can find his work at kevinmcshane.org, or as we just mentioned, the improv, it's kind of sketch improv, though, wouldn't you say? It's long form thematic sketch improv at lustyhorde.com. And then on Twitter, It's K McShane on Twitter. And Kevin, how are you doing today? And thank you for joining us.
Ah, the French. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, guys.
It is a delight to have you on.
Thank you so much.
Kevin, also, by way of introduction, I think I'm allowed to say on the show, and I can edit this out if not, is a longtime and very successful employee over at BuzzFeed. And one of the reasons why we wanted to have him on is not only is he one of our favorite people, not as in is he a super talented polymath, but specifically, Kevin, we were hoping to have you on today because you had a lot of thoughts about our Patreon outcome about sharing statements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Isn't that a correct way to phrase that, Brad? Sharing statements?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I listened to that show and I actually found it pretty funny that that you guys went to the Try Guys panel because I sat next to the Try Guys for a couple of years and they're super great guys and they really know what they're talking about. And but a lot of the stuff that they were talking about was just kind of general BuzzFeed philosophy when it comes to sharing.
Really?
Yeah. You know, BuzzFeed, particularly in the video section where I work, our job is basically to kind of deconstruct why and how people share and to, you know, make videos that are specifically geared towards people sharing.
Okay. And so what do you mean by that? Like break that down. What is the company like? I've just started at BuzzFeed this week. I just got hired. I'm like, oh, hi, Mr. McShane. I'm new to BuzzFeed. So break down that statement. What does that mean for a new employee? How do they get trained up on that?
Well, basically, it's paying attention to the reasons why people share, why people send a piece of media or content to one another. And kind of the overall thing that we like to do is we like to differentiate between consumable media and shareable media. And so like by that, I'll try and couch it in terms of comics as opposed to video just because this is a comics podcast.
Sure, that's fine.
So if we're talking about consumable comics, then that's I think that's what you guys are mostly familiar with and what your readers or your listeners are mostly familiar with is the idea of consumable comics are kind of a, you know, long form narrative that's, you know, like Drive or Evil Inc. or something like that. And the primary goal of consumable media, consumable comics, is to absorb the reader into the story. You know, to kind of get them lost, get them invested in the characters, and to just enjoy the experience.
Right. Okay.
And this is opposed to what we call shareable media or shareable comics, which, you know, is the goal is also to, you know, make something enjoyable for the reader. But there is an additional component to it. And that additional component is to be shared, is to be what we call a unit of conversation. For people, you know, people can use your comic or your piece of media to start a conversation or continue a conversation with people online.
That's an interesting phrase, a unit of conversation. So, and this is not dismissive. Are you saying in a way that it's like the equivalent of a grandmother giving a Hallmark card where I don't have the right words, but this thing has the right words to use? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's absolutely what it is. And so, and I guess I should differentiate between what we call shareable media and memes, because they're both units of conversation. But with shareable media and shareable comics, there is there's more of a craft to it, you know, where it is specifically made by someone in order to be shared, whereas memes are more. I'm trying to figure out a way to say this that doesn't sound like I'm looking down on people who make memes.
Would it help if you stepped away and jiggled for a minute and just came back feeling fresh,
feeling refreshed
and healthy?
Do you need a jiggle break?
Yeah, exactly.
Dave, I think you've got some jiggle break music over there, don't you?
Do I have jiggle break music?
Play the jiggle break music.
Brad, let me tell you something.
All right, go ahead. While Kevin's jiggling, we'll take this time to say thank you so much for being a Comic Lab backer over at Patreon. That's patreon.com/comiclab. And now, back to the show.
He actually did it, Kevin. I was just...
Wow. That was amazing.
What's amazing is I just put on Spanish Flea and Brad immediately goes into... Ba-da-ba-da. Well, all right. Today's been brought to you by mayonnaise. Oh. Mayonnaise making every sandwich better.
Oh, Dave, do you remember... Oh, man. When we were hanging out in your studio, this was years ago, and there's that online streaming service that only does like the Muzak. I forget what it's called. It's called like the Something 3000.
Okay. Oh, right. And, oh, this is when I was doing Stripped and I was looking for copyright-free music, right?
Right. And so it's this online site. It's like the Something 3000, like the Aerator 3000 or something like that. And it's this online radio site that streams only like 1950s like elevator music. And you and I were talking about doing a podcast where we just let that play and improvise commercials.
Oh, right.
Oh, that's
Brad,
brilliant.
We were going to do a whole podcast where Kevin and I, like, I would bring 10 clips and Kevin would bring 10 clips. And we would just have to, so one of us would play like a 70s song and the other one would have to come up with on the spot an improv of a commercial from the 70s. And then the other person would bring out a 50s song.
Great.
So let's just for pure entertainment's value, and then we'll go back to share statements. Here we go, Kevin. You got to go and create a commercial right now, and here we go.
Say there, friends. Do you like your current bed? Well, if you don't, why don't you give a Sealy mattress a chance? That's right, Sealy mattress, the only one with quality seal. The Sealy quality seal on every Sealy mattress. Go to your local Woolworths and sign up now for your free test, 100 nights on us. Sealy mattress, it's where you sleep.
Oh, God, that was great. That was great. So, Brad, wouldn't that be a fun podcast? Just 20, 30 minutes of that?
Oh, my God. Yeah, just you'd say, you know, here's your mark and go. And it would just, you'd just be off to the races. I would listen to that podcast every week.
By the way, the mark of quality in that specific bit was the fact that you incorporated Woolworth. That was amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. I was just marveling over that. It's like, oh, where did he pull that from?
But, all right, so... Yeah. Now that he's had some chance to mentally jiggle and he's feeling refreshed on it. All right, so now back to share statements. So go ahead.
So just getting back to the idea of like shareable comics. So like
the difference between a shareable comic and like, say, a meme.
Right. So like a shareable comic is something that has, oh, here's a good example. Let's just use Sheldon as an example.
Yeah.
As one should, yeah.
Yeah. Sheldon is different from a meme in that the goal is still, you know, to make the reader laugh and to be shareable. But there are certain like recurring elements. There are things that the audience can hook into. Whereas with a meme, there's no real emotional attachment to the actual content of the
Gotcha.
The image.
It's like there's no there. There's no meat to keep you
exactly.
around.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, the meme is just the message, whereas like Sheldon is something. It's got the message, and it's also got something, you know, that that gives you character
gotcha.
Affinity. And so, you know, when we're talking about like shareable comics, it's everything from, you know, single panels to something like Sheldon. And kind of the sweet spot between what we would consider consumable media and shareable media would be something like your traditional gag strip, like Sheldon or like Garfield, Calvin and Hobbes, stuff like that, where there are recurring characters, but you don't need to know, you know, 50 pages of backstory. You need to know is that Garfield is the cat, John is the owner. Here's a joke for the day. If you like it, share it with your friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So here's my thoughts on that. And that is this. For most of the people listening to this show want their social media posts to go viral, even though listening to you speak, some of the like I'm thinking about what I've posted over the past 2 weeks. Some of them are never going to go viral. And to be fair, they were never meant to go viral. They were meant to do a completely different purpose. But I still want to go viral every now and again because of all the benefits that I perceive of that happening. We'll come around to perceived benefits in a little bit.
Sure.
So let's say I want to go viral. Can you give me some of the elements that I should be thinking about when I'm preparing my post?
Well, I wouldn't think so much about the specific elements because there's 100 ways that you can approach it. I would actually, what we tend to do at BuzzFeed is we tend to kind of reverse engineer it. We start with the SharePoint.
Really?
Point where people are sharing. This is where share statements come in. Yeah, exactly. So there's basically, just to give you a quick overview, there's basically three main types of sharing. There's the identity share, the information share, and what we call an emotional gift, right? And this is kind of what Try Guys talked about in their presentation, if you watched it. So with the identity share, I think this is what you guys in the comics world are most familiar with. It's something that people can share as a way of saying, this is so me, you know, or this is so you, you know. You know, listening to you guys, I think this is what you hit upon when you talk about merchandise like T-shirts and enamel pins. You know, no one's really going to buy something with your logo or your character unless it's Garfield. So you want to craft your merchandise to be something that expresses an identity, whether somebody is a librarian or if they're a coffee lover.
Right.
Or something
whereas
like
Kevin
that,
is,
you know,
so a Samantha and I'm such a Carrie. Right. I mean, that's
exactly
your
right. Right.
Exactly. So that's the identity share.
I like how you kept the most masculine voice. Exactly.
Does that make me a Charlotte?
Well, I mean, Dave hit it right on the head. I am definitely a Samantha.
Yeah, well, that's true. You are. You
I
really
know
are.
This. I took the BuzzFeed quiz. And then the second one is the information share. This is something a lot of like news articles or website articles are this, and it's like when you share it, the share statement is, you know, I found this fascinating, or when you send it to a friend, it's like, oh, we were just talking about this, you know.
Yeah.
And so I don't think it's so much about comics unless you're like Mark Trail and it's a interesting thing about birds. I don't know. But then the last one is what we call the emotional gift. And that is you're sharing it and you're saying, this made me feel a specific way. And that can be anything from happy to rage to, you know, nostalgia, even to just like missing a friend.
Right. So, example, the video of the kid coming into the classroom and the mother or the father has just been returned home from being deployed in the military. Right. And there's the tearful reunion and you sit and watch the video and choke up. And mm-hmm. that's the emotional gift. You're giving them the gift of kind of a bittersweet moment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so I think to use comics as an example, do you remember that? That Bill Watterson homage that went around a couple years ago that I don't remember the name of the cartoonist, but it was basically, it was talking about like, you know, being dedicated to your craft and like not giving up and everything like that. And it was drawn in the style of Bill Watterson.
Yep. And it was taken from a Watterson speech, right?
Yes.
Maybe that's what it was. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, you know what? I know who it was. Yep. It was the Australian cartoonist who I'm now blanking on. Oh, gosh. Now I feel bad that I'm forgetting who it was. Anyway, keep going, Kevin, and I'm going to remember.
Yeah, so that's a good example of like an emotional gift. It's like, this made me feel inspired, so I'm going to share it because I want you to feel inspired as well.
Right.
You know? So if you're – so in terms of like share statements and trying to craft something that's going viral, I would start by actually thinking about the point at which people are going to share. What are they going to say? What is their Facebook text going to be when they post this on Facebook, and kind work backwards from there, you know? And then you also should think about what type of share it is, just in terms of the broad context, the mechanics of it. Basically, most shares break down into two broad categories, and it's the one-to-one share, which is, like I said, is kind of the conversational share. You know, it's between two people. It's like we were just talking about this. Or there's the one-to-many share, which is what we call the broadcast share, where it's you post it on Facebook. A lot of identity shares are this, where it's just like, this is me. This is so me.
Right. So can I ask you, Kevin, because this and we can start breaking these down, but are most of these I statements or me statements, or how are the share statements structured to allow people to internalize and personalize them for themselves?
Well, when you are a content creator sharing it, the key word is you. You know, you should incorporate the word you into it. That's why it's called YouTube and not MeTube.
Hey-o! He's here all week, everybody.
It's true. It's true, though.
That was the most fatherly moment Kevin's ever had with me, where he puts his hand on my shoulder and he goes, there's a reason why it's called YouTube, son.
Listen, David. I want to talk to you about the internet. It's a wild world out there.
David, you're going to start noticing changes about your body. Also, there's a reason why it's called YouTube. Thanks, Dad.
Now get back in your room and get back to your jiggling.
Get back to jiggling. What? You're never going to make the football team unless you jiggle.
Dad, I'm just reading Spider-Man, I swear. I know you are. I know you're reading Spider-Man.
Yeah, so...
Okay, so anyway, I do want to hit on that point. So there's a reason why the word always incorporates the word you, and explain that to me. Give me a sample sentence that Kevin would use when you're sharing something that would incorporate the word you. Like, you won't believe what this one doctor did. I mean, I guess that's a classic.
That doesn't quite work anymore because people are, like, so used to that format. Okay, here's one. I had a comic a couple months ago that was basically a pie chart, and it was the amount of time spent in a relationship. And, you know, it was a sliver for eating, there was a sliver for cuddling, and then the rest of the chart was holding up your phone and telling your partner, look at this. So that was the comic. And I think the post statement was something like, admit it, you're doing this right now, aren't you?
Oh, great.
Very good.
Great.
Very good.
So it implicates the reader and saying, I see you. Here's what I want you to do. You know, go ahead and share it. And then everybody shared it with their significant other. People commented, yeah, I am. I'm doing it right now. And then they tagged their significant other. So,
and then what's also nice is there's a Hitchcockian element to it in that you don't actually say what the topic is or what the, you know, you mean you leave the key thing unsaid or unspoken. Right. That's interesting.
Right, exactly.
Okay, thank you for that example. That's great. Well, I'll be off jiggling now. I don't know why I keep going back to jiggling.
So now answer me this. What do you think about the very direct call to action where you say, you know, like if you agree, share if you disagree, or one like equals a prayer and a share equals a novena and stuff like that. What do you think about the very, very direct approach on that kind of thing?
I It depends on what it's accompanying. You know, if it is, if it's something where, again, it's not about the reader, if it's just something consumable where it's like, here's this, you know, here's this drawing that I did of Spider-Man, you know, like if you like it, share if you, you know, like love Spider-Man or something like that.
Yeah.
That to me doesn't work. Again, just going back to the example that I just gave, I could have also made that share statement, tag your significant other that you're showing this to right now.
And exactly.
That's a very direct call to action, but it's basically telling them, hey, go ahead and share. I don't personally, and you know, at BuzzFeed, we don't try to go just for likes because likes are just kind of, I mean, they're useless internet points.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean? Right. What you want is the share. So the more you can kind of either directly or indirectly encourage people to share it, the better.
So first of all, let's briefly talk for a second about why likes are useless, because I agree with you, and then we'll get back to to me, Brad's constant railing about like, if you took the time to like it, you could have shared it. Why do you think someone is willing to like something but not share something? At BuzzFeed, do you guys ever talk about that? Why someone would be willing to like it? Like, what is that emotional moment for them where they're not sharing it or they're not passing it along or retweeting it or whatever, you know, whatever form they're going to take, but they are willing to go, yeah, it's good.
Yeah. And I think that's exactly what it is. I think it's basically a measure of how well you executed on the shareable content. You know, if somebody likes it, then that means like, okay, you did the bare minimum in terms of making someone engage with it. Whereas if you really knocked it out of the park, they would be, oh my God, I got to share this with somebody.
Right. Oh, I see what
you're saying. So it's kind of the two different, it's the two different levels, you know?
Yeah.
So now
also
one question.
there's another component of it, which is just purely mechanical. You know, it takes one click or two taps on Instagram to like something. It takes, on Instagram, it takes a tap. It takes typing in the person's name. You know what I mean? Like it seems like, you know, nothing, but it is physically more work to share something than it is to like it.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have to tell you though, because most of my career, I have been shooting for the broadcast share, Kevin, and this is just me admitting my own failure. Mm-hmm. And I have completely discounted the power of the one-to-one share or the, you know, or the one person conversational sharing.
Share,
And Instagram over the last 12 months, because that's when I've been focusing on Instagram, has completely changed my attitude about how powerful conversational or one-to-one sharing can be when taken over time. Mm-hmm. Instagram, for whatever reason, I think it's because of the way it doesn't allow you to easily broadcast share as a user, you know? And so, so much of the sharing on Instagram is, hey, Brad, it's me, Dave. Check out this comic that Kevin made, and I'm going to tag you, Brad, in this one. Because Instagram is so much of that, at first I was dismissive of it, and this is the honest to God truth. But over the year, I have seen how much one-to-one and conversational growth or conversational sharing can aid growth. And it has been eye-opening to me in my own failure over the course of my career in terms of discounting how powerful that could be given enough time.
Yeah. It's just two different approaches, you know, to shareable stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think, though, as a cartoonist, and maybe you guys can correct me here, but my goal was always like, I want a comic that gets 1,000 retweets. Whereas if you look over a year, if you've had comics where each one got 5 or 10 or 20 or 30 personal or one-to-one or conversational shares, that adds up over time. It really does. It doesn't feel, you don't have the big win. You don't get to spike the football of like, I got a comic with 1,000 retweets, but it adds up as a slow builder. Boy, it does add up for comics.
Yeah, it definitely does.
Well, that's something that we've been grappling with in the last couple of episodes. As a matter of fact, we got talking about Instagram in the episode that just went up, and on the Comic Lab Discord server, there was a listener saying, "Oh my gosh, you just got me talked into Instagram, and now you're talking me out of Instagram." And it's like, no, this is something that's evolving on a weekly basis. If you're me, but I want to talk about this because it's something that. Yet another listener kind of very politely took me aside and took the time to explain it to me. And that is the yield of all this. So without putting you on the spot, You've got that. You've got that pie chart comic, and it goes over really, really good. It's got a lot of viral potential to it. It probably got. Did you share with us the number of shares and likes that you got there?
On Instagram, I think it got, you know, 1200 or something like that.
Bah, boy, I'm over here dancing when I get into triple digits. So what was the outcome of that? I don't even want to parse that. The dust settles, you're at 1200 shares, you're feeling good about yourself. What did you get?
Oh, well, that was 1200 likes. Shares is hard to do on Instagram. To figure out, because you have a combination of people doing a direct share, you know, through a DM, and then you also have people are basically tagging the person that you're sharing with in the comments. So it's the metrics are kind of hard to come by. The actual yield of that. Well, let me couch that another way. The biggest hit that I had this year was I had a comic that 9gag put on their Instagram, and they have, I think, over 10 million followers or something like that. And the comic got, I think, 1.6 million likes.
Right.
And, you know, I think over 1,000 comments, you know, mostly people sharing, tagging their friends or whatever. And the direct benefit of that to my personal Instagram account, because luckily they tagged me in it, was about 600 new followers.
Okay. Now, what's the outshot of those 600 followers? At what point does this turn into money?
Oh, I see. Okay. That's what we're getting at.
Because this is the conversational point, just to catch you up on the show from last week. So I have made a big push personally for Instagram, because I've seen that the growth rate on Instagram is far outseeding Twitter, at least for me. In the last year, I've gone from like 5,000 to 30,000 on Instagram, and with kind of low-hanging fruit in terms of sharing old comics and stuff like that. And I will continue to do it. My goal for 2019 is to get it up to 100,000. But Brad and I are still struggling with how much money does that translate into, and how can we monetize, and how can we make use of those 100,000 people?
Right.
And so I think, Brad, that's where you're coming from, right?
Yeah. In other words, these days I measure an awful lot of things by whether it brought me new Patreon backers, or whether I can direct them to Kickstarter, or whether I've got an online store I can point them to and see results. So what my question is, how is this yielding for you?
Right. I think the way to capitalize on a large Instagram following is to you know, try to direct people elsewhere, or to try to monetize that audience for other people. And by that, I mean, you know, you guys had talked about that Instagram comic who had over a million followers, but only, you know, a couple hundred Patreon followers.
Yeah.
And I think I know who you guys are talking about. And his model is very different from you guys. You know, it's his main source of income is not Patreon. His is
it's probably publishing, I would imagine.
And merchandise and also sponsored posts, things like that. So I think to kind of confirm Brad's notion, I don't think there's really a direct link between success on Instagram and an increase in Patreon followers. I think a big Instagram following will help you in other ways, either sponsored posts or, you know, doing things for other Instagram accounts, you know, for brands things like that. I don't think it's directly translatable, because when you think about it, Instagram is free. You know, why would someone want to, you know, patronize you and your comic when they're going to see it just through their scroll anyway?
Right.
You know?
Well, my spidey sense is that, and this is also with cartoonists that I follow and respect, is that somewhere in the mid hundred thousands of followers, you start to get more sponsored post approaches of like, hi, we're a pen company, or hi, we're a paper company, or hi, we do art supplies or special events, and we would like to pay you X amount of money to post this thing on your Instagram. So I can see that that happens.
Right.
And I know that he also has a publishing, which, as the three of us know, is probably not that much money, but is a nice check in terms of a forward or, you know, an advance for the book, and then probably not much after that.
Well, and I do have to say, leading right into merch, that this guy that had taken me aside on Instagram, Anthony Wheeler, whose art is really tremendous. He was kind enough to kind of pull me aside and say, okay, here's what you're not understanding about Instagram, which is, by the way, a topic that could fill a book. But he goes, here's what you're not getting. You know, I've got an online store. So when I build this up, and he's built up his Instagram pretty impressively, when I put out like a sketchbook, when I put out an offering, I can direct an awful lot of people to my store. And for him, I don't want to share his numbers, but it was he was getting results that I was very respectful of. So there was that too, the merchandising end of it, I became recently very aware of.
Sure.
Well, and I will say this too. I've only been focusing on Instagram for a year, but I have noticed this, Kevin, is that with the ever-increasing numbers, when I mention that I'm going to Emerald City Comic Con or San Diego Comic Con, I have noticed in the dozens people that would walk up to the booth for the first time ever and go, hey, I've been following you on Instagram. I didn't know you were, this is so exciting. I read that you're going to be at Comic-Con and I'd love to get a book. And so I do know just based on sort of, I don't know what you would call that kind of like anecdotal evidence that it does create a rising tide of income. So that's why I'm going to stick with Instagram. And I do want to, my goal for 2019 is still to grow it to 100,000 to see what I can do with it. But I guess it just caught me by surprise that someone with that many followers couldn't make better use of Patreon, which seems like low hanging fruit to me in terms of how you can monetize your audience.
Yeah. And it may just be, it also may just be a priority thing.
Yeah. And a personality thing. Some people do not like asking for a patronage, you know? And so I get that too. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Kevin, I want to jump back to share statements again because you had a really good foundation there with the idea of always incorporating the word you. I think that's really good, and that's I am going to incorporate that this week with my share statement. So thank you for that.
Sure.
But what would you say is another key hallmark of a share statement aside from the word you? Anything else that we can learn or take away from this? Can I ask a leading question?
Sure.
Is it best to always have either a question or an accusation in your share statement?
It doesn't hurt. You don't have to, but it doesn't hurt.
Okay.
You know, because a question or a leading statement is, again, it's kind of that subtle call to action.
Right.
You know, it's just another way of kind of getting the reader to engage. But yeah, I think the key is just to basically take that extra step and think about the reader and how they're going to use this particular piece of media. Again, just kind of working backwards from whatever the share statement is and, you know, crafting your post that way.
Now, have you guys ever done A-B testing with share statements? And for those that are wondering, A-B testing is sort of when you do two things side by side to see which one works better. Have you ever taken the same bit of content and with two different share statements and seen? Oh, you do. Okay.
Yeah, all the time.
Well, so give me an example of how you do it and what the results were.
It's, again, just kind of what we were just talking about. You know, it's anything that incorporates you tends to share better. Also, in terms of like if you're doing like an emotional gift type of share, I know it doesn't feel like it, but positivity actually shares better than negativity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because you look at Facebook, you look at Twitter, it seems that everybody's just sharing negative news and, you know, negative opinions and trying to tear down people and stuff like that. And the thing about the rage share is that it spreads faster. You know, that's why, you know, breaking news, you know, that is outrageous spreads like wildfire. But our data actually shows that positivity shares wider and deeper.
Wow.
You know, so that's why, you know, you keep seeing the same video of dogs, you know, on your Facebook feed and stuff like that, because people keep sharing it over and over again.
Right.
You know, whereas, you know, that article about, you know, politics from last week, it'll die real quick.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
That's something I've actually been experimenting with a little bit as I've been trying to do the same thing that Dave's doing, trying to expand on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that that Anthony Wheeler told me was try to post every day. And of, he's like, so much of this is what you already know.
Right.
Post every day. When somebody comments, respond, because the algorithm really likes that. And and you start to see some things, especially on Instagram, where sometimes you can just respond with three little emojis, you know, kind of a non-committal response. Right. But something that I decided to do, because it's like, ah, geez, do I really, what's best in terms of posting? And I started posting the video clips from Comic Lab using that little audiogram that Simplecast uses. And also just like a positive thought for the day. Like today, and a lot of times I'll go back through old Comic Lab episodes and say, and go through the show notes and like, what did we talk about? Oh, here's one. And today's just went up by where I was talking about don't get obsessed on the idea. The idea is not that important. It's the execution of an idea that really makes a great piece of art. And I'm seeing those. And again, it's usually a very positive message. And I'm seeing a really a good result from those. Yeah. Although I will say on Instagram, the things that always work better are the static single comic images. Anything that the best things I share there are things that can just be understood in one image.
Ooh, right. I'm really glad you brought that up because that's actually something I want to ask you guys about. When I share my comics on Instagram, I don't do any scrolling, and you guys break it up panel per panel so people swipe through. I wonder which one works better. I guess is my question. My gut tells me that putting it all in one image does better. Simply because, again, just the mechanics of it, to get someone to actually swipe is more work than getting them just to stop scrolling.
Well, I will put it to you this way, Kevin. I think if you want someone to read it and like it, no argument, a single panel, either ideally a single panel comic or a comic that presents in a single frame that is multiple panels, if you know what I mean by that, a fuller comic that presents in a single frame. That will absolutely generate more readers and generate more likes. But here is my weird thinking on this. Once you've gotten someone to swipe down into a comic and already you've lowered the total number of readers by asking them to swipe, right? I agree with you on that. Right. But they are already taking action on that comic. And so they're emotionally involved. And I know that sounds stupid, but they are physically interacting with the comic. They're emotionally involved. And so I my spidey sense tells me that they are more willing to share it with a friend because they're already into the comic. They already have to go back out of the comic to get back to their feed. So if they're in there, they might as well share it. That's my thought.
Yeah, because at BuzzFeed on our comics account, we do both. And unfortunately, you can't do A/B testing on Instagram. So we don't know which one works better.
I can say from my experience that like when I do panel by panel swiping on Evil Inc., it's because 9 chances out of 10, I've got too many panels that I just couldn't fit it into what Instagram requires. That, what is it, 1,068 by 1,068, somewhere in there. Yeah. But I can't fit that. And if I did, the words would be too small to be read anyway. So I've got to do panel by panel. But I'll back up what you guys have said. When I do something that's either single panel or if I can fit like a 4 panel inside of that frame, those tend to go much, much better and get a lot better response than the swipe.
Right.
Although people respond positively to the swipe too. And it might be the novelty, but when I started doing the swipe, I got all kinds of positive reactions from people that really, or at least reported enjoying reading them, but then compare the numbers. Do you guys do that best of 2018? The 9 images on Instagram? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Man, I went into that. You know, they've got these apps that'll do it, and I look at the terms of service. The company's in Uruguay, and they reserve the rights to do data mining for 30 days, even if you ask them to remove you. And it's like, oh my God, what? Why would I do this? I can build 9 images and based on my impressions over the years or over the past 12 months very easily. I'm an artist. Uh-huh. I can do this, you know?
Yeah.
But you look at, I did because it was trending. Look at the top 9 images that I had posted throughout 2018. Every one of them except one was a single panel comic.
Interesting.
Well, that's interesting. That's an interesting bit of data right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, that was your most liked comics, right? Not your most shared comics.
Well, you can, there's a lot of ways that, Instagram gives you those insights. I think what I had ended up deciding was the best representative was the most impressions.
Okay.
I want to say impressions. I hope I'm using the right word there, because it was either impressions or engagement.
Yeah, engagement is the one that you
but
want.
But I ended up going with one of the two. Yeah.
So here's why I think impressions might have been the wrong way to go, because people scrolling through your feed, or scrolling through their feed rather, and pausing even for a second, I think will count as an impression.
Oh, whereas you know what? You're not wrong.
I think you want engagement as a sign that people were actually willing to interact or share or and somehow do something with that comic, you know?
Yeah.
Rather than just passively receiving it as, oh, Brad did this comic. All right. Well,
looks like he's doing comics.
But listen, I'm still learning as well. This is me speaking from semi-ignorance, so I'm willing to be corrected.
Oh no, I get it.
So to keep going on this, so the share statements, a lot of incorporation of you, either leading questions or accusatory questions or questions in general. Mm-hmm. Anything else that we should know about a share statement that's helpful?
Yeah, I think another thing you should keep in mind is to kind of get very specific about the type of relationship that you want within the share. And by that, I mean, think about not only the person that you want to target to share it, but also who they're sharing it with. So like a lot of the stuff that I do is for basically girlfriends to show their boyfriends. because it's a very fertile market, and the other way around doesn't work as well. So just think about, like, you know, who am I making this for? Is this for sons to share with their fathers? Is this for you know, friends to share with their book club? Is this, you know, mothers to send to their daughters? You know, I think the more you can be very specific with that and kind of drill down on the specific relationship within the share,
right,
the better.
Right.
Yeah. You see that on Facebook all the time, where it's just blatant. Ugh. And where your family, you know, your cousins or your nieces are sharing this stuff, and you go, like the one that says, studies have shown that middle children are most intelligent.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Because I hate those so much, because it's like, I want to do a parody of those that are like, basically says, you will share this if you are this identity, if we title it correctly.
Oh no. Or studies have shown that middle children can be easily convinced to share things by just the mention of their family placement.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on, Brad. What do you think to one of the $5 questions? Shall we?
There's one thing I wanted to talk about, because it's been a couple of weeks now and we haven't mentioned it, because there's been so much going on in webcomics, and we do have to take and what better time than with Kevin with us? We do have to mention the passing of a real leader in comics, and that is Stan Lee, who passed away a few weeks ago at the age of 95. Mm-hmm. And we're actually talking to a person that has gotten a chance to meet him up close and personal and share a couple of phrases back and forth with him. What was it like meeting Stan Lee?
So Brad is pimping me to
basically
do my Stan Lee impression.
Pimping is
now
not the
do
right
it in
phrase.
The voice. Do it in the voice.
Well, I tell you, Brad. When I got to meet Stan Lee, oh, what a happy day that was.
Oh,
Well, so we should give a little bit of background for people that aren't familiar. So Kevin, I wasn't joking at the beginning, top of the show, when I said that Kevin is a polymath. Not only is he good at comics, not only is he good at videos, not only is he good at sketch and improv, he's also an amazing voice talent. And I think one of the reasons we first met you was Comic-Con, probably nearest to 10 years ago.
Yeah.
When you were going around Comic-Con doing what at the time you called the real Stan Lee, right? Or the fake Stan Lee?
Fake Stan Lee.
The fake Stan Lee.
Yeah.
And it's such a source of joy. And so actually, deconstructing it, why do you think that is for so many people, that the fake Stan Lee was such a source of joy?
I think it's because it's just overflow affection from the man himself. You know what I mean? Like he was so beloved that even like a two-bit impersonator like me got the same amount of love. When I went around,
you were at least three bits if you were a bit.
Oh, well, thank you.
But listen, my kids and I, those are still on YouTube, aren't those? Those fake Stan Lee videos that you did? Yeah. My kids and I would sit and watch those on YouTube and just howl and watch them over and over and over. And the point at which it's one of the longest, to be honest, one of the longest running gags in my family between me and my boys. Is when you went up to Scott Kurtz's booth at Comic-Con, toppled over all of his books, started yelling, fuck your booth, in the Stan Lee voice. And of course, they bleeped it out, but you knew what you were saying. And then ran off with your hands pumping fists above your head in an old man run. And we could sit there and watch that for hours on end and never stop laughing.
Yeah. Yeah. Scott was he was a good sport when it came to that. Well, because you guys know how it is when somebody comes and messes with your booth, you know?
Oh, right.
The first time I did it, I didn't tell him. I just ran up and did it. And and I think we got it on camera and he was like, what the hell is going on? But from that point on, I told him, I was like, look, I'm going to come up. I'm going to mess up your booth and I'm going to run away. He's like, okay, great. So.
But I like your idea, though, that there's such an overflow of affection for the guy that even getting an overspillage of that was so dear for your impersonation of him, you know?
Oh, like,
I think that's true. Like, there are a few people in our lifetimes who will have a lasting impact on American culture, now global culture, like Stan Lee did. I mean, so many people were dismissive of what he did while it was being created. And if you think back to the 50s, 60s, 70s, and now it is literally $100 billion brands that are almost like modern American gods in a Greek sense of you know, Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, X-Men, all this sort of stuff. And he, you know, as every cartoonist will admit, he obviously had his failings in terms of sharing credit, you know, with Romita and Kirby and all that sort of stuff. And I think that speaks to, frankly, the insecure, shy kid that he never stopped being. It is worth just marking the impact of his career now that he's gone.
Yeah.
So my question to you, Kevin, is now that he's gone, would you ever, I've always wondered, once Stan Lee passes, would you continue? And to be fair, you've got an awful lot of things that are going on right now. It's not like you need one more thing to do.
Right.
But taking scheduling out of the picture, now that he's gone, would you ever reprise that role? Or is that something that is left with the man himself?
Oh, I'd definitely do it again. You know, I'd love to go back down to Comic-Con and just kind of walk around and goof around. But, you know, Comic-Con is such an expensive endeavor now, you know, that it's just like, I would have to make that work for me. But yeah, I mean, I love doing it. I love, because just seeing the look on people's faces and just goofing around with people. You know, one of my favorite bits is going up to the serious collector places with like the glass cases, and I got one of them to like let me hold like Amazing Fantasy 15 or something like that, and I was just like, okay, I'm out of here, you know, just kind of walked away with it. And they're like, ha ha ha, and I'm like, no, you don't understand, I created this is mine, I'm just gonna be taking it.
I've just got my little briefcase right here, clip clip, all right, I'm off and going.
Exactly.
Let me tell you, for the joy of seeing that again, I think I've got an extra booth badge. I'm going to be emailing you later this summer, and we're going to get you down there.
Okay.
I will miss seeing his presence in, for me, I remember even as a kid when he would do the intros and outros, I think, to the Spider-Man animated comics and
Spider-Man
the X-Men
and his amazing friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just great. Like, what a showman. Like, that's it's frankly, as web cartoonists or cartoonists who have to manage their own careers, there's a lot to be learned from Stan Lee and his ceaseless promotion, frankly. You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I remember that was shortly after, in the late 70s, I had gotten my hands on How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way for Christmas, which became my Bible. I carried it around everywhere. And it was around that time that animated TV series came out. And when I heard Stan Lee doing the intros, it was like the voice of God. You know, I would like shush everybody in the living room, and it's like, we have to listen to this. He's talking now. It's his voice. You know, it was really significant to me when I was a kid. Oh, just
and
to
your
hear his voice.
And your parents were like, oh jeez, Brad's shushing everyone again.
Yeah. Kevin, we should pause the show to mention that Brad didn't get out much.
No, I definitely did not.
Kevin, there's no one else in the room, and he's like, quiet, everyone, quiet.
He's talking to his stuffed animals that are like lined up. You know?
Yeah, and that's embarrassing when you're in college, but my dad's in the background saying, I just once I'd like to see him get this way over Monday Night Football. Just once. But listen, Dave, you are right. Now that we've pimped Kevin out for appropriately so, we do have a bunch of $5 Patreon level questions. And there's one of them I want to put right to the top of the list because it's very timely. The time the show comes, we're a little bit early. We've got a buffer, but it's as timely as we're going to get. So I'm going to read it off, okay? And this comes from our backer, Carl Kershaw, who writes, I've been hosting my webcomic on Tumblr for a few years now because it's free, and I thought the shared aspect of the platform might help to increase readership. Now that Tumblr has started flagging my content as explicit, and then he notes in parentheses, it's not, I'm looking into moving back to WordPress. I used to use WordPress and the Comic Press theme, but the constant hacking and fixing of my site made it a constant frustration. You guys look like you're both still on WordPress. Do you have any problems with hacking? How do you effectively secure your site? Are you still using Comic Press, or is there a more modern, scalable theme or plugin that you'd recommend for comics navigation? What do you think, guys? What if you're in Carl's situation, you're bounced off of Tumblr, unrightfully so. You get caught up in the NSFW algorithm, and you're looking for hosting. What's your answer to this?
Well, I will go first. I'm going to cut Kevin off, even though he was opening his mouth to speak. I could tell.
How dare you? How dare you?
He was doing the inhale right before speaking, but I'm going to cut him off. First, I just want to mention that Carl does one of my favorite comics in the whole world called The Abominable Charles Christopher. And if you are not familiar with Carl's work, please go check it out. It's amazing. And hello, Carl, who is currently in Japan. I hope you are having a wonderful
year. Oh, is he in Japan?
He is in Japan.
You know a lot about this guy.
Oh.
Yeah, what is going on?
I just moved my Chablis across the table. I'm like, let me tell you.
I happen to know for the moment that he's listening while running on a treadmill in Japan. Holy shit.
Like, how do you know all this?
I know. Trust me, I know.
So go ahead, Brad. You were going to say, I cut you. I'm cutting everyone off.
We've got a Comic Lab backer that sent us all those goodies from Japan. Yep. And did you remember those little bears that had the vanilla pudding in them?
Oh, my God.
We got to get him to send me some more of those because those were fantastic.
Frankly, Japanese sweets are amazing. Like, have you ever been to a country where the sweets are like, oh, man, these people really don't understand sugar? The Japanese understand sugar. Although there's also that propensity to put a lot of weird flavors in soda in Japan. You got to wave that past. Their sweets are amazing. And thank you to the Comic Lab reader listener who sent us all that wonderful stuff from Japan. That was amazing. Anyway, back to the question. No, so Carl,
yes.
My big thing with Tumblr before since I cut off Kevin, I'm going to jump in on this, is I would give, frankly, Tumblr a week or two to figure out this algorithm that they've instituted to get rid of pornography, adult content, and not suitable for work content. Because I think my own, like, layman's thinking on this is that they are interpreting a lot of comic eyes as nipples. And I'm not joking about that. I think that's what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of simply drawn comics where, because if you think about the average comic eye, it's a circle within a circle, right?
Right.
And
right.
A lot of porn filters are going to think that that's some form of a nipple. And so I think they've just got to get better on it. So I think in general, I think just give it a week or two. I think they're going to figure that out. Or it might take upwards of a month. So you don't necessarily have to leave Tumblr. But I will say that if you are not suitable for work cartoonist on Tumblr, this is undoubtedly a bad moment for you. Mm-hmm. They are probably not ever going to make that work for you. And it is a time to think about changing. And so for that, I will turn that part over to Brad. What would you recommend for someone who is a not suitable for work cartoonist on Tumblr? I know that's not Carl's question. But...
Well, that's a really good question. And it's right now, it's a little bit of a troubling time for NSFW creators because the thing that's at the heart of this is the legislation that Congress passed earlier this year that's aimed at sex workers, specifically SESTA and FOSTA. And it's written in such a way that's broadly interpreted, and a lot of people are getting caught in the shrapnel. And to be fair, if you listen to many people who work in the sex worker industry, they're saying that this actually makes things worse for us. It drives us underground. Having the ability to screen clients openly in a website was a much better thing. From what I'm reading, what they say, and of course I'm going to take them at face value. They're saying that this is written in such a way that's it's not even good for them, the people that it's written to protect. But it's gonna have a ripple effect across the web when it goes into effect later. At the end of this month. Anybody that's doing NSFW is a little bit scared right now because we're not sure how this is going to shake out. A lot of people are going directly to Twitter. There's a bunch of other sites. I see Newgrounds being brought up an awful lot. There's sites like that have been around for a long time, like Hentai Foundry and so forth, that have always been there. But a lot of people are jumping straight to Twitter. In fact, there was a hashtag, Tumblr Migrants, that developed on Twitter specifically for following and discovering not safe for work creators, which I think was a really nice thing as well. But the answer, Dave, is I don't know. That the one thing that I that keeps me from the cold sweat 2 a.m. Shakes. That I haven't had for a couple of years now, but started to come back. On the latest Hang Time, somebody specifically mentioned Tumblr to Jack Conti from Patreon. And he said that he's aware of that. He knows what's going on. And he said unequivocally, Patreon is not going to abandon their not safe for work artists. That made me feel good. In fact, I've said it before in this show. I will love that guy for a long, long time. Short of taking a bullet for him, which I hope it would never come to that. I will always have nothing but praise for him in how he's really refused to back down on some of these issues and say, no, Patreon is for artists, whether they're doing safe for work, not safe for work. It's for artists. And if they've got people to back them, then good. I like that. I like that a lot. As far as what's going to happen at the end of the month, I don't know. I'm kind of white knuckling it a little bit over here until I see what's going to come out. But, you know, these sorts of things happen. Part of webcomics publishing is changing and adapting and if we're headed for a major period of change, then that's a challenge that a bunch of us are going to have to take.
Right.
I don't know whether that was the answer to your question, Dave, but the short answer is I think a lot of them are going to Twitter.
That's as helpful as anything we could say. But so specifically then, let's drill down on Carl's question. Carl, who's currently eating a bite of a sandwich, Kevin, in case you were wondering.
Weird. No, it's not weird that I know this.
He's got
what flavor pocky does he have again?
He's got the chocolate, but the strawberry off to the side on his desk, and it's not weird that I know this.
Carl, you're being watched. Get out now.
So anyway, so how would we advise Carl to rehost his comics if he let's say for someone that does want to move off Tumblr? What is the best? I'll lead this off, and then I'll open it up to you guys. My thought is always it's best long term to own where you are and to own your site. Right? We've always advised that. Because there can't be a third party, whether it's a company, whether it's a platform that can turn you off, right? So if you own it, if you own your own hosting and you own your own site, you're best off. But with that in mind, Kevin and Brad, what would you advise someone who is on Tumblr who wants to move off now? Where should they go? What should they do?
Yeah, I think you're right, Dave. I think it's always best to have kind of a, like you guys say, a central hub site where you own it and, you know, people can't kick you off and stuff. But I want to add to that by saying that I also think that you should, in addition to having your home site, also be everywhere that your audience is. You know, if Tumblr goes away, like you should be on Facebook, you should be on Instagram, you should be on Twitter, you should be posting to all of those places, you know, and if you're not safe for work, creator than, you know, some of the places that Brad mentioned, you know, just there's, and you guys have said this before, like the days of getting people to come back to your home site are over, you know, you need to go where they are.
Right.
So I would advise that.
I've got a couple of thoughts. Number one, I am very bullish on Lion Webtoons. I think it's got a huge built-in audience.
Yep.
I've been, for the last, since the new Evil Link chapter started, I've been reformatting my comic in a vertical scroll. So you scroll down panel by panel. And it's just got an awful lot of built-in readers there. And they're readers that are thumb scrollers. You know, it gives us an opportunity to reach out to people who are looking at this stuff on their phones or smaller tablets. And I like that. I like having that outreach. So I would point to that. Tapastic, back in the day, I would have suggested they had that really creepy rights grab in their terms of service about a year, maybe 2 years ago. And it was bad enough that it made me shut down and wipe my stuff off of their site. And it left me with a bad taste in my mouth, but I'll mention them just so you can make your own decision. And then I'm going to come around to this. So Carl says, WordPress, people were always hacking me. I always had security problems. So here's an important thing you have to realize since you've been gone, Carl, and that is this. Since you've been gone, WordPress has changed how it updates. So it used to be if you had a WordPress site and WordPress put out an update, you'd have to manually go in there and update or upgrade WordPress. And if you didn't, somebody could very easily use the holes that developed to hack into your site. And that's where most of the hacking, if I understand the topic correctly, that's where most of the hacking came from, was from people who hadn't updated WordPress. Well,
and
for
also
less,
from not to interrupt, but I will. Also, a lot of the hacking came from contact form plugins, which is something that you don't need anymore.
Right.
Know, so since I disabled all the contact stuff on my sites, I don't get hacked anymore.
Yeah. And the big point there is that now WordPress, you can easily set it up that as soon as they come up with a new, like they see a hole, so they put a patch out. Well, as soon as they put the new WordPress out, it automatically loads on your site and you've got the newest WordPress. So that's a huge advantage over what it used to be like running WordPress. Since they did that, I think that addressed an awful lot of what you're talking about.
Well, I think that summarizes the best practices, which is if you can host it yourself, and that WordPress in general has improved their ability to to keep hacking from happening. I think that's a good enough summary of what we would recommend. But I also would recommend that if he has been happy with Tumblr and he's not currently producing Not Suitable for Work, and I know he's not because he's put his sandwich down and he's now clicking onto his computer.
Oh my
God. It's not weird, Kevin.
Get out of the house. Get out of the house.
It's not weird. It's not weird that I know this. I like that, though. Get out of the house. The call is coming from a man under your desk. In general, though, I would before I delete that Tumblr account, give it 2 to 4 weeks to just see if they sort that out, because I think it's important enough for them to figure that out, because they know they've done wrong in this rush to fix this problem that they thought they had. They know that they've done wrong. It's just you give them the time to get the programming hours in and to sort that out, because I think it still might be workable before you make some big dramatic decision, you know?
Yeah.
So that's that, I think. I think. Kevin, last thoughts on that?
I think that's good.
No, high five, cosign. What is it? What is it? I don't know.
High five, retweet.
High five, retweet.
High five, retweet. High five, retweet.
Sorry. Trying to use you guys as vernacular.
Thank you.
On that note, guess what? You've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been professional jiggler Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and cartoonist of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And amateur shocker Dave Kellett, co-director of Stripped and cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com.
And the Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net. And this episode was edited by Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions at www.woodsong.media.
Comic Lab is made possible by your support on patreon.com/comiclab. So we'll go ahead and say that twice, patreon.com/comiclab. And Dave, special thanks to that guy right over there, right?
Indeed. Our dear friend Kevin McShane, you can find at kevinmcshane.org. Or over on Twitter at kmcshane, or for his improv sketch at lustyhorde.com.
And thanks for having me, true believers. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Dan.
Anytime, gentlemen.
I can't help but giggle with it.